I called the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can turn it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack.
His heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from the Air Force. There's no one that can.
Yo. Blackest sports podcast you have ever heard right here on the Freedom Train Network, where it goes down each and every week. I am your host with the most, Joseph Ward, aka your mother's boyfriend. Yes, I said it. Hey man, what's up? How y'all doing? Thank you for all the support, the listeners. Everybody who's making this show a success, making this network a success, making what we've created, Patrick and I, what we created, the Freedom Train, making it a success. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, I got a lot to get into, so let me go ahead and get to my housekeeping so I can get to my topics. So, of course, you know the Freedom Train, it's the Freedom Train Network, but the Fix is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants delivers African history at your fingertips through various means. Through their African history book series, web series, the African history curriculum app, the educational classes, they will come directly to your school, your organization, your event, do educational classes, the YouTube channel, all the different means that On the Shoulders of Giants have to display the stories of the sung and unsung heroes of the African diaspora that we mostly don't learn about, and also to get black people out of the habit of only waiting on February, which is Black History Month, to learn about black history. So make sure you learn more about On the Shoulders of Giants at www.ontheshouldersone.com. And make sure you get copies of the books, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 1, Volume 2, that is shedding light on our sung and unsung heroes in North America and Central America. So make sure you get that. www.ontheshouldersone.com. Make sure you follow me, Joseph Ward, on Twitter at JoeWard84. Follow the Freedom Train Network on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Follow the Freedom Train Network on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Like our Freedom Train Network Facebook page. Subscribe to the Freedom Train Network YouTube channel. And also subscribe to the Freedom Train and the Fix on iTunes and Google Play. That way you get episodes coming straight down to your phone. All right. So let's go ahead and jump on into it. So as you know, we always start with our HBCU spotlight. And this week I'm putting my HBCU spotlight on the Aggies of North Carolina A&T. Now, North Carolina A&T is making history. And they are, this particular team of North Carolina A&T is the first A&T team to post a 9-0 record. So let me read you this article. Okay, the Aggies are making large amounts of history in 2017, but with so much more history remaining to be made this season, they find themselves slightly tempered about the unprecedented accomplishments they have already achieved. The win over Norfolk State this past weekend, that they had the win over Norfolk State in the 2017 Aggies, are the only football team in the 93 history to have a 9-0 record. This year's senior class, the only senior class in school history to put together four consecutive 9-win seasons. Individually, junior quarterback Lamar Raynard broke the Aggies' single-season passing record. He eclipsed Maceo Bowling's 23-year-old record on a 24-yard pass completion to graduate tight end Trey Scott in the third quarter. Bolin's mark stood, the previous quarterback, Bolin, his mark stood at 2,262 yards. With at least two games remaining, Raynard has 2,302 yards. Head coach Rob Broadway got into the act as well, meaning that he has 56 wins as an Aggie head coach, moving him into second place behind Hornsby Howell, who has 56 wins all time. I mean, excuse me. Hold up. I don't know. But he's in second place, and he's behind Bill Hayes with 106 wins. Yeah, I messed that all the way up. But it's all good. But North Carolina A&T is 9-0. The quarterback is now the all-time leading passer, and their coach is now second in wins in school history. And they still have two games left to play, and they might go to the playoff game and all that thing, all those things, that depending on what happens. So if they go 10-0, you know, they're making breaking more records, making more history, doing the damn thing. So, you know, we got to give a shout-out to the Aggies for what they're doing, the Aggies of North Carolina A&T, for posting that 9-0 record, breaking all these records within their program, and just you know, bringing victories to black college football. When you bring victories to black college football, that's a great thing. So, you know, I talked a lot about a lot of the undefeated black college teams over the last couple of weeks. So that kind of give you a look into the talent that the black colleges still have. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted this HBCU spotlight. Because we know a lot of our talent, a lot of the black talent has gone to white schools. But there's still some talent at these black schools, and we've got to give, you know, we got to give a spotlight to, we got to give shine to, we got to let it be known that talent is still there. And when they shine, we got to say something about it. We're always talking about how nobody talks about what goes on in our community. Hell, don't wait on nobody else to talk about it. We talk about it. So that's why we do this HBCU spotlight. So one time for the North Carolina A&T Aggies for their 9-0 start. Their quarterback for Raynard for his 2,302 yards. And their coach, Rod Broadway, for his 56 wins. And I mean, he's doing it. He's in second place. He moved ahead of two coaches, Bert Pickett and Hornsby Howell, for second place on the all-time list behind Bill Hayes with 106 wins. And Rod Broadway has 56 wins. I messed that all the way up the first time, but it's all good. No, the seniors, for the seniors on this team, this is their fourth consecutive 9-win season as well. So we got to give a shout-out to the seniors of North Carolina A&T. And we want to make sure our studio audience is showing love to the Aggies of North Carolina A&T for their 9-0 start and their record-breaking season. All right, like I say, we got a lot to cover today. We got a lot to cover, so we're going to keep this thing moving. So at HBCU News, for me, this is, you know, it hits home. It's at Florida A&M. You know, I'm a graduate of Florida A&M. So, last week, information was put out that Florida A&M was upgrading their athletic facility. Well, specifically their football facility. Excuse me. Building a new stadium and upgrading the locker rooms and the facilities and the workout. The gym and the weight room and all those things there for the football team. So all the facilities were supposed to get upgraded, right? And then we find out at the end of the week that the athletic director, Milton Overton, who was, from my understanding, was behind a lot of this new construction and building and upgrade of the stadium, was leaving for Kennesaw State. So it was announced on Tuesday that Milton Overton has been named the new athletic director at Kennesaw State. So Overton is a 25-year veteran of college athletics administration. He has spent the last 2 years as director of athletics at Florida A&M. He will be formally introduced at a press conference at Kennesaw State University's campus Thursday. So that was last Thursday. He was introduced at 9 a.m. November 9th at 10 a.m. He is the fourth individual at Kennesaw State to hold the position as athletic director. Minton Overton brings extensive skills and experience to growing athletic programs. We are confident one of the representatives of the school said they are confident that he will provide the leadership needed to continue Kennesaw State's competitive spirit for athletics and take the Owls to greater heights in collegiate sports. Following a six-year stint as senior associate athletic director at the University of Alabama and 6 years prior as associate athletic director at Texas A&M University, he was hired at FAMU in 2015. He has helped FAMU transform some. This article is saying he's instilled a sense of accountability and fiscal responsibility. It's saying that FAMU made strides in areas of fundraising and fan development. Let me finish reading. I'll come back to that. For the first time in more than a decade, the athletics department boasted a balanced budget in 2016-2017 season, while achieving three consecutive years of record-breaking fundraising and ticket sales growth. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Now, this is saying that Florida A&M's revenue has increased by $2 million under Overton's watch, and fan participation has soared, with the football team finishing among the top five in FCS attendance in 2015 and top three in 2016. One of his benchmark initiatives was the establishment of FAMU's giving program investment in champions. That's a key component of the increased revenue. Thanks in part to Overton's emphasis on academics and NCAA compliance, FAMU boasted higher team grade point averages and increased APR scores across every sport. Under his watch, each Rattler team remained eligible for NCAA postseason competition for the first time in several years. So, I don't have the numbers in front of me. Now, I do know from what we see that, like I've said before, FAMU do need more money, and they do need more fan support. Fan support at FAMU is not what it used to be. The team has been losing. The team hasn't been winning like they were in the 90s and, early 2000s, and the fan participation has waned a lot. It has waned a lot. But there they are, the numbers about Overton. I wish him well at Kennesaw State. We just need stability at FAMU. FAMU needs real stability, and somebody that's going to be there for a while, coaches that can be there for a while, so we can actually turn that program around. FAMU is already facing uphill battles with the emergence of these other schools that's taken away from the black talent. So, got to be able to find some kind of stability over at FAMU. I hope we find a good athletic director that can continue the growth that Overton has sparked and can go. I do wonder, were there reasons at FAMU that he left? I hope not, but I do wonder, were there any other reasons at FAMU that he left? Because they're known for running people away. Time will tell. Somebody going to run their mouth. Trust me, somebody going to run their mouth. We're going to find out what's going on around here. We definitely going to find out what's going on around here. But that was my HBCU spotlight and my HBCU news. Now let's crank this thing up a little bit, right? So last week, we talked about the Houston, Texas owner, Robert McNair, talking about how the inmates are running the prison, and we were wondering what the Texans were going to do. They took a knee and still played the game. They took a knee. That's what their response was, to take a knee. Okay, I guess. I don't know. I feel like the players could do more. I really do feel like the players could do more. I do feel like their expressions could be stronger. I do feel like they don't have to just be confined to knee taking. You know, now, I mean, like I keep preaching, players who can take a hit in the game check don't play. Impactful players don't play games. Like, the NFL is already losing money, and I'm going to get into that. It's causing, and other people are blaming the NFL for losing money, but I'm going to get into that. But it's amazing that, I don't know, I guess I feel like the players could do more. I really do. I feel like the players could not just be confined to just taking knees. I feel like now, especially with these statements that these owners are taking, and I feel like more drastic measures are going to be made. I feel like, you know, we already know that they're working on creating a policy to make the players stand. You know, the NBA has that, so they're working on that. But I feel like the NFL players could really drop their nuts on these situations. I really do. I mean, I really do feel like that. I really do feel like the NFL players could drop their nuts. But I will echo something that Richard Sherman said during some interviews this past week. He said that, you know, there are a lot of people expecting the NFL players to sit out games and take drastic sacrifices, but these same people are not willing to not watch the game. So you can't be calling the players, I do agree, you can't be calling these players soft and you're not willing to not watch the games. You tripping. Like, you really tripping. Like, you're not even really about this cause. I love NFL. I mean, I love football. I say that. I love football. I love professional football. But I'm not watching these games. Like, I'm in a group me chat with my homeboys, and they watching the game and talking about the game, especially the Cowboys and Chiefs. I know it's a pretty good game, but I'm not watching the games. And we can't expect players to take stands if we ain't willing to take stands. We got to meet them somewhere, right? So, with that being said, I'm not watching the game, so I can be a little more critical. And I do feel like the players could take more real stands, drop your nets. I mean, damn, like, really drop your nets and take some stands. Make these owners understand that you are not their property in that manner. Make these owners understand that you all are men. Like, you're human beings, you're men. And you would not be subjugated. Straight up, like, that's really what it comes down to. Like, really let these owners know you will not be subjugated, but your behavior, NFL players, Houston Texans, like DeAndre Hopkins, he walked out, but he came back. He got married, he came back. But y'all can take real stands. Y'all really can take real stands. It's really interesting to see this process, because these big, strong men are being so emasculated by these owners, because the thought of losing dollars. Now, like I say, most of my calling for sitting out games has been for the players. All of my calling to sit out games have been for players who financially can take the hits. If you can't financially take the hits, you got to find a different way for you to make a stand. But all NFL players can take some type of stand. Hell, even if you're not gonna take these stands because you're being strategic, at least start investing money in the right place so you can start your own league. Take a real stand, and then when you get everything good, just walk out on it. But something has to be made. Something has to be done. Use your money to help the communities. I mean, something has to be done. You can't just stick to saying, okay, well, we're just gonna take knees and lock arms. That's weak right now, because we know y'all not even doing that because of the original reason to bring awareness to what's happening in our communities as far as police violence. Is now the taking of the knee is now the new rebuttal for everything now. I'm going to take a knee. 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 Somebody say something, take a knee. Somebody do something, take a knee. Somebody make you mad, take a knee. And you got all types of people posting these crazy pictures all over the net of them taking knees in their offices and Congress buildings and all these things here. Don't take knees. Do real things to bring real change. Especially like if you're not a football player, hey, you taking a knee for? Make real change. Don't take no knee. You don't have to take a knee. Make a real change. Do something to make the environment better. Do something to change the cultures. Taking a knee for? They taking the knee because you know their power is limited. But if you're not a football player, what you taking a knee for? Do something significant. Like, we have enough talking heads. Need more action. More activists who are taking real actions. That's what we need. No more victories. Them taking a knee meant nothing. Said nothing. Everybody knew that's what you was going to do. We was hoping somebody do something real. But we knew y'all was going to take a knee. And we knew y'all was going to play. This the new punishment for white supremacy is to make white supremacy money, I guess. I'm going to get off that because I don't want to talk no more about that. But let me say this about the Houston Texans. So, during their anthem protest, I guess in their rebuttal to the owner, offensive tackle, Dwayne Brown, you know, he was known for throwing up his black power fist. So, I don't know how related this is, but it could be related, but I'ma just relate to them because I feel like it. So, Dwayne Brown actually made his season debut this game, this past game where the Houston Texans did. They just took their knee after Robert McNair said that they were prisoners. And so, Dwayne Brown made his season debut against the Seahawks that game. And this was his first game after, you know, sitting out over contract disputes. So, he was trying to get his deal restructured. Deal didn't get restructured, so he's back on the field. And apparently, Dwayne Brown has been a staple in that offensive line for some time. So, now Dwayne Brown is actually being traded to the Seattle Seahawks. And the speculation is, was he traded because he threw up the black power fist, or was he traded because of the contract issues or injuries or any of those things? So, you know, he was also interviewed after the Robert McNair comments, and Dwayne Brown had his statements and things like that. The Texans played a hell of a game that game. Deshaun Watson got off. The score was 41-38. The Texans lost to the Seahawks. And next thing we know, Dwayne Brown is traded to the Seahawks. So, much of his 10 years has been spent with the Texans. He was selected 26th overall in 2006. He has two more years remaining on a six-year contract worth $53.4 million. He signed with the Texans. And they say when he goes to Seattle, he should replace the starting left tackle and be able to start right away. So, yeah, I mean, was he traded because he threw up the black power fist or because he was vocal? I don't know. We know how the NFL is. But I'm going to imply that he was. Fuck it. I'm going to imply that had something to do with it. And that, actually, I'm going to say it like this. I believe that could have been the tipping point. They may have already been contemplating trading him because of the contract disputes. Or we can either say this. The comments plus the black power fist made them say, you know what, well, he is expendable. So, those are things to think about with this. But, we start our own league. Things could be handled differently. You can actually speak up against social injustice. The NFL basically wants to silence the players from speaking out against social injustice. So that's why the comment was made of the inmates running the asylum. The NFL protests are working to a degree, but not the way we would think it is. Now, I get back to that later. I'm going to cover that later because the NFL is losing money. I'm going to get back to that. But former Houston Texans left tackle, Duane Brown, is now current Seattle Seahawks left tackle, Duane Brown, because he was traded to the Seattle Seahawks from the Houston Texans, coincidentally after his remarks in his Black Power fist, following the comments that Robert McNair, the owner of the Houston Texans, made when he said that the inmates are running the prison, meaning that the NFL players are still protesting and hasn't been stopped, and it's causing the NFL to lose revenue and other things. So, yeah, that's what's going on. So that's the beginning of the trade news. So that kind of snowballed all of the trade stuff that happened in the NFL this week, right? So next thing you know, I'm riding down the street and I'm listening to the radio and I find out that the Patriots have traded Jimmy Garoppolo. So the backup quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, has been traded to the San Francisco 49ers for a second round pick. All right. So remember earlier this season, the Patriots traded their third string quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, to the Colts, and they got your boy, Dorsett. They got Philip Dorsett, and they got Dorsett on the heels of the injury to, who it was, Edelman? I think the injury to Edelman. So they brought in Dorsett, and from my understanding, I ain't really been watching, but from my understanding, the Dorsett thing ain't really worked out so far. So the Patriots really are without they just got Tom Brady and then some other motherfuckers, right? So they lost two backup quarterbacks who we know have skill. We do know they have skill. So, you know what I'm saying? Garoppolo don't have a big sample size, neither do Brissett. Brissett has played more games than Garoppolo, so of course, you know, this upcoming week we're gonna get to see what Garoppolo can do. But now the Patriots don't have no backup quarterbacks, and Tom Brady's 40 years old, so they're basically banking on the fact that Tom Brady gonna keep playing, because according to Brady, he wanna play like five more years. He's saying he can play like five more years. Now he is balling this year. Once again, at the age of 40, he is balling. So we're gonna see how that goes. We're gonna see how that goes with the Patriots and stuff moving forward in the season. You know, they always find a way to win, the system that they have. And you know, people always say, well, Brady only good because he's a system quarterback. All quarterbacks are products of a system. Every last quarterback is a product of a system. Nobody's out there just wild, wild west winging it. Nah, every quarterback is a product of a system. Don't get mad because somebody's system better than yours. So that's Garoppolo, right? So further in NFL trade news, got dang on find out that Kelvin Benjamin, the former receiver for the Carolina Panthers, had been traded to the Buffalo Bills. And it seems like Buffalo is the destination for all FSU players after they go, graduate or leave FSU and go to the NFL. It seems like the bulk of them end up in either Buffalo or Minnesota, but namely Buffalo. A whole bunch of FSU players have ended up in Buffalo, so now Kelvin Benjamin being the latest. And he's a big body to add to the receiving corps that lost Sammy Watkins and Marquise Lee earlier this year. And Kelvin Benjamin, now he was traded from Carolina, you know, him and Devin Funches, two big bodies. It was said that Kelvin Benjamin came into camp overweight, fat as hell. And one of the knocks, I don't think Kelvin Benjamin I think he's good enough to play in the NFL. I just don't think he's the number one receiver. I don't think Kelvin, I never thought Kelvin Benjamin was that good. I think Kelvin Benjamin is resting on two good seasons, right? His last season at FSU with Jameis Winston, because Kelvin Benjamin wasn't Nobody could count on Kelvin Benjamin at FSU until that year Jameis Winston was the starter. And then Kelvin Benjamin's rookie season. So those were his only two good years. He got hurt his second season. Last year's season wasn't that good. And then this year he's traded to Buffalo. Came into camp overweight. And one of the biggest knocks on him is he can't really get open. He's not that great in running a full route tree, and he's a big body, but he can't really get open. So, now, we didn't see that coming, but remember, Cam Newton did have his best season as a quarterback the year Kelvin Benjamin was hurt. And Kelvin Benjamin was hurt in training camp, so he didn't play any of the season. And Cam Newton was league MVP. The Carolina Panthers went 15-1 and lost in the Super Bowl without Kelvin Benjamin. So he was traded to the Buffalo Bills for a third-round pick and a seventh-round pick, right? And, you know, we're going to see what happens with him and Tyrod up there. But I don't know. That was interesting. I really didn't see that coming. I don't think that was a good move for Carolina. I don't, but we're going to see how that works out. You know, Carolina brings in the rookies. I forgot the other rookie name from Ohio State, but McCaffrey, running back McCaffrey from Stanford. So they brought in some pieces, but we're going to see what else they have. I don't know. I just don't think that the Carolina Panthers are doing a lot to really make their offense as explosive as it can be with a quarterback like Cam Newton, as dynamic as he is, right? Cam can do a lot. Cam isn't as good as he can be. And let's just face it. Maybe it's the sissy-ass clothes. Maybe it's the sissy-ass blonde chin hair. Maybe it's his sissy-ass ways. I don't know. Cam is a big-ass sissy, though. But Cam, to me, isn't as good as he can be, because we know he has the capacity to put up 4,000-yard passing seasons every year and be more precise with that ball. He has to get better at that. The running is an aspect of what he do, but as he gets older, he's going to have to dial back on running and rely more on his arm. And football IQ has to get better. And he got to start acting like a sissy, too. Now, Cam, one thing I will say. I know you don't like those interviews, but you signed up for them. Signed up for the interviews. Go to the interviews. Stop acting like that. You did sign. I don't really like that you're forced to go either, but you signed up for that. You know. That's what it is. Stop acting like that. But nevertheless, Kelvin Benjamin was traded to the Buffalo Bills. And the last trade is the Miami Dolphins have traded running back Ajayi to the Philadelphia Eagles for a fourth-round draft pick. That was announced on Tuesday. I just think the Dolphins, also like the Carolina Panthers, are making bad decisions. I don't know what the hell the Dolphins were thinking. Basically trading their best offensive player. I don't know. So far this season, he has 138 rushes for 465 yards. Last year, he had 1,200 yards and 8 touchdowns. He hasn't scored a touchdown this season, but he does have like 465 yards. The league is like, for rushing yards, is like 765 coming into this week. Like 765, so he's like 300 yards off the league. You know, if you look at what he did last year, that's like two games. That's like one bust-out game because, you know, remember here, he was the only one in the league with those 200-yard games like last year or the year before. I think it was last year he had those 200-yard rushing games. Jay Ajayi was balling. Basically, the Miami Dolphins' best offensive player. And they traded him. So we don't know what direction the Miami Dolphins are trying to go into, but that's good for the Philadelphia Eagles. That's not good for the NFC East or the Cowboy faithful. But nevertheless, we got a stud running back in Ezekiel Elliott. But it makes the Eagles a lot stronger over there in Philly. They run the game a lot better. So Jay Ajayi will be paired with LeGarrette Blount. And Carson Wentz is already snapping this season. And, you know, the Eagles have made great strides. You got to give them their props this year. They made great strides. And they're the best record in the league, the best team in the NFC East. But when they do play us again, we're going to put that thing on them, meaning the Cowboys. But, you know, that's what's going on in the NFL as far as the trades, right? A lot of trades going on. A lot of those trades happen. A lot of that stuff don't make sense to me. But hell, I ain't gonna go too far into it because, hell, I hope all them damn teams lose their games. I follow the Cowboys. I hope they lose their damn games. Hell, make all the trades you want to. Just don't send nobody else that can make an actual impact to Philadelphia. All right. Now, move on. Moving on. Like Maya said, we're moving on. So, as I alluded to earlier, the NFL is losing money, losing revenue, losing fans, and could be losing people wanting to advertise with the league. So, a third of NFL TV viewers boycotting games because of Colin Kaepernick-led protests. So, nearly one-third or 32% of adults say they are less likely to watch NFL game telecasts because of the Kaepernick-led player protest against racial injustice, according to Rasmussen's telephone online survey of 1,000 American adults conducted October 2nd through the 3rd. Only 13% said that they were more likely to watch the NFL game because of the continuing protest by Kaepernick and supporters such as Antonio Camardo of the Colts, who was cut only 2 days after raising his fist during the playing of the Star Spangled Banner in London on Sunday. And that was Antonio Camardo was cut last year. So, the NFL is losing its revenue. It's not making the money that it was. The white people have taken the stand. And black people, we should look at this and learn something. So the white people say, you know what, we don't like those Negroes. We don't like those Negroes taking no knee in our football game. This is football. We came here to watch football, not no Negroes taking no knee. I ain't come here to watch no Negroes take no knee. Stupid niggers. That's what the white folks saying, right? And on the other hand, you got black folk like me that's saying, I'm not watching the NFL because the NFL support white supremacy. Then you do have people that are still watching. So, but the bulk of the people who are not watching the NFL are the white people who are mad at the protest. Now, that's compounded by folk like me who are not watching the NFL because we realize that they support white supremacy. So, either way, the NFL is losing money because of protest, but the right protest is not causing the NFL to lose money. And we kind of already knew that going into this. We already knew that the NFL really wasn't going to take too large of a hit from black people not watching the NFL. But because white folk mad now, the NFL is starting to pay attention. So in a backdoor way, the protests are working, but it's still not really solving or bringing more light to the issue of police brutality against black people in America. But in a backdoor way of satisfaction, we're kind of glad that the NFL is losing money. But the NFL is losing money for the reason to make them more willing to stop the protest and shut the protest down rather than support the protest because them cracker-ass crackers mad at the protest. So, you know, that's what led to a lot of stuff I said last week, NFL having those meetings to suppress or to talk about suppressing the protest. Of course, people like Jerry Jones and all those, they want the protest to end. So, you know, Jerry Jones, man, he old fuck boy, man. He know it. Roger Goodell, a fuck boy, Roger Kraft, all those owners who want to suppress it, they some fuck boys. And, you know, we're gonna see what the long term thing is. I do think, like I said, the NFL players just don't have enough stuff to back them. So it's gonna be interesting moving forward. But I do think eventually the NFL owners are gonna come up with something, because like I keep saying, the NFL players are the house Negroes. Not all of them, but a good number of the NFL players are the house Negroes of the sporting world. They're the house Negroes of athletics. They are. And they know they are. So that's why a lot of the real stands aren't being taken. But the NFL is losing money. We are happy that the NFL is losing money. But I just wish the NFL were losing money for the right protest. Not the cracker protest. Not because crackers mad that black people are standing up against injustices. Like, think about that. Like, really think about that. Like, white people are pissed because you are standing up for yourself. Now, this is not anything new. But this has always been one of the things that tripped me out when I study history and I look at oppression throughout history and the times in different places. It's like a bully. Like a bully, just keep fucking with you. Just keep fucking with you. Just keep fucking with you. And when you stand up for yourself, he get mad. You bust him in his shit, he get mad. As if you did something wrong for standing up for yourself. Hey, man, look at here. Us black people, we have to make sure that we are doing better. And not just as the NFL players, because a lot of you black people out there, y'all are mad at what's going on with NFL, but your ass still watching. That shit don't make no sense. You're still watching the NFL, but you're mad at it. Because your wanting to watch football is just that strong. You need to drop your nuts. If you're a woman, drop your clit. If you're a man, drop your nuts. Man up, woman up. Stop being soft and take a stand for something. It's like I said earlier, like Richard Sherman said, you can't ask somebody else to take a big stand when hell, you're asking them to take a paid stand when you're not even willing to take a damn free stand. Now, we should be taking these stands so we can show our players that we have their backs, so we can eventually get those players out of this NFL and start our own league. But the players will never be into us creating our own league because they don't feel like we got their back and they don't feel like they'll be able to prosper. And we have to make them understand that united, we can. United, we can. So we got to do better. We have to do better. We definitely have to do better. So now, all right. This is not directly NFL news, but it's related. So, coming off the heels of the Jemele Hill controversy with ESPN about the tweets about the Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones and Donald Trump, ESPN has created what people are coining the Jemele Hill rule. So, new rules issued Thursday tell employees to confer with producers and editors before posting commentary on social or political issues to manage volume and ensure a fair and effective presentation. The policies also mandate that when employees to post comments online, they should be related to a current issue impacting sports unless otherwise approved by senior editorial management. Now, this article is saying that the new policies emerged after months of controversies erupting over ESPN anchors talking about everything from Trump to race and crime. And then, you know, Jemele Hill, like I said, Jemele Hill said something about Jerry Jones and Trump. She was suspended. ESPN has, this article has always said, also saying that since 2009, you know, ESPN or, social media, since the advent of it, ESPN has been dealing with everything that the employees of its company have been saying. So now it's saying this, and this is ESPN saying this: everything we post or comment on in social media is public. The new ESPN guidelines state, and everything we do in public is associated with ESPN. Employees are also told not to break news online that should first be disseminated on ESPN's own outlets. Staff are allowed to pass along information that is being spread publicly, such as during press conferences and the like. Do nothing that will undercut your colleagues' work or embroil the company in unwanted controversy. So, they're also saying, think before you tweet, post, or otherwise engage on social platforms. So basically, ESPN is telling its employees, don't talk about social issues, stick to sports. And if you're going to talk about social issues, talk about the ones that are safe. Talk about the social issues that white people like to talk about, like breast cancer. And anything that makes white people feel all warm and fuzzy inside, those are the things that you should talk about on your own social media. But guess what? When you sign up to work for white folk, this is what comes with it. Now, I keep telling y'all, I'm free. I might not get the money that Jemele and them get, but I'm free. I can post what I want to on my social media. And who am I going to get mad at? Myself? Jemele Hill, Michael Smith, Stephen A. Smith, all these anchors for these various news outlets, these sporting outlets, now have the clout and the platform that they can start their own and thrive. But they continue to put themselves in these positions. You work for these crackers who support white supremacy. And that's just what ESPN is, as another white supremacy support cracker outlet that just happened to be the worldwide leader in sports. The subsidiary of ABC and Disney. And we all know Walt Disney was a racist fuck. But the Jemele Hill rules are out. The ESPN is laying out. So if you want to talk about social issues, you can't. You want to talk about what's going on in the black community, you can't, unless you talk about it in a way that make white people feel all warm and fuzzy on the inside. So we got to think twice about pushing our babies and encouraging our babies to become a part of these global white institutions. We should have been creating these institutions, for our babies to be a part of. Two, if we're going to push something on our babies, push our babies to start their own. To not put themselves in a position to have their voices suppressed or checked or monitored by white supremacists, by the white supremacists that they work for, right? That's what's happening with our babies. And when our babies become adults, this is what happens when our babies become adults. Now they're in these positions to where they have to do these things or their lifestyles are compromised. So let's from the beginning encourage our babies to be owners, to be bosses, rulers, rather than workers and having to be muzzled. Jemele is muzzled. Michael Smith. Everybody's muzzled because of this. And I don't lie. If I was some of them other people, I would be mad at Jemele for kicking the hornet's nest. I would be mad at Jemele for kicking the hornet's nest because Jemele also knew that she was behind enemy lines and didn't have the power to do the things that she was doing, but she did them anyway. She kind of kicked the hornet's nest and kind of messed it up for everybody. Right? So that's all. I'm not mad at anything that Jamel said or did. I'm not mad that she did it. But like as I've said before, I do acknowledge that she kicked the hornet's nest, and she didn't have to. She did it anyway, and she didn't have to. After, and remember, she kicked the hornet's nest and looked for help after. She was reckless. Because she was also reckless in her social media when she said that she was supporting and retweeting the article that black men are the white, that straight black men are the white men for, are the white men of the black community, which is straight bullshit. Then she wanted us to put our capes on to come help. So, I don't know. I don't think nobody's voice should be suppressed. But I do think she kicked the hornet's nest. I don't think voice should be suppressed, but I do think she kicked the hornet's nest. I tried to make that shit rhyme. I tried to. You can laugh at me. I don't care. You can laugh at me. It's all good. Because this is entertaining, baby. This is entertainment, baby. So ESPN got the Jamel Hill rule. So if you want to talk about social issues on your own personal social media account, you can't. Unless you check with your boss first. If you work for ESPN. Hallelujah. All right, enough about that, Jamel. We talked about Jamel for a while. I just want to drop that little dime on you that ESPN has dropped the Jamel Hill rule and suppressing the voices of their staff. And if you want to talk about social issues, you can't unless you talk about it in a way that make white people, that's first, hear about your white owners and then make white owners feel all warm and fuzzy. Right. So, the World Series has just wrapped up, and congratulations to the 2017 World Series champions, the Houston Astros. Round of applause for the Houston Astros for winning the 2017 World Series. They won it over the Dodgers, and Game 7, the Houston Astros took it with a 5-1 win. Now, the Astros jumped out to a 2-0 lead in the series. And then the Dodgers came back and won three of the games. So it was a 3-2 lead for the Dodgers. The Astros won Game 6 and Game 7. So, you know, I'm sorry. The Dodgers won game one. The Astros won game two. Dodgers won game one. The Astros won game two. Dodgers won game three. The Astros won game three. The Dodgers won game four. The Astros won game five. The Dodgers won game six, and the Astros won game seven. So it was back and forth. My bad, I was looking at it wrong. I don't know what I was looking at. It was back and forth. Astros game one, Dodgers game two. Dodgers game one. I'm fucking this all up. Dodgers game one, Astros game two. Astros game three, Dodgers game four. Astros game five, Dodgers game six, Astros game seven. And that made the Astros the 2017 World Series champions. And they did it, and that's, I think, it's pretty cool, you know, coming off the tragedy that happened in the city of Houston with the flooding. So to kind of give a little hope and happiness to the city of Houston, I guess, on the entertainment side. Not as far as real life or changing any things, but, you know, for people who want to escape, that's a great escape for them. So one time for the Houston Astros for a good, and it was a good series, too. It was a pretty good series. I watched some of it. I ain't gonna lie, I couldn't really sit down and watch the whole thing. I really couldn't. I tried, but I really couldn't sit down and watch. But no, it had some, it had good drama, and Astros won, so they are the 2017 World Series champions. All right, so let's move this thing on. Let's move along. So, get some college football. There's a lot of stuff happened this Saturday in college football. People lost, so we're gonna have some movement. And the damn Miami Hurricanes is looking good. As a Floridian, I think Hurricanes can make some good out of what they're doing. So, start on Friday. Memphis beat Tulsa. Memphis is 25. They ranked number 25 coming into this game with Aiden. They were 7-1 coming into the game, and they beat Tulsa 41-14, which makes them 8-1 on the season, and Tulsa 2-8 on the season. So the Georgia Bulldogs now ranked number one after the college football playoff rankings came out, the first rankings of the season, and the Georgia Bulldogs are number one team in the nation as far as the college football rankings, and they played the South Carolina Gamecocks, and they beat them 24-10, and we're going to see if they remain number one. They may not, because number two, Alabama, defeated number 19, LSU, 24-10 in a hard-fought defensive game. But Alabama came out on top. And we're going to see what happens in that. Number three, Notre Dame. Notre Dame is number three with an 8-1 record. And they beat Wake Forest 48-37. They gave up a lot of points. And Notre Dame got to see Miami next week. So we're going to see how that beat, because giving up 37 points ain't good, especially to Wake Forest. So I'm going to give you all the scores and then come back through these games. So number four is Clemson. And Clemson beat a good NC State team with three losses. Now with three losses, they beat them 30-31. So it was a close one, but they won. But Clemson won. Now, Clemson number four. Number five is Oklahoma. And Oklahoma played number 11 Oklahoma State in a Big 12 shootout. I call it a shootout because the score was 62-52. That's like an NBA halftime score. So it was 62-52 in football. And of course, two teams from the Big 12. And the Big 12 don't play defense. They don't. So score was 62-52. So I'm gonna come back looking at stats and stuff. So number six team is Ohio State. And they lost to Iowa, who's unranked, 55-24, which gives Ohio State their second loss on the season. And then number seven, Penn State, get their second loss in a row on the season as they lose 24-27 to Michigan State. Number eight, TCU, beat Texas 24-7. Number nine, Wisconsin. Now, Penn State and Ohio State losing hurts Wisconsin, because Wisconsin, yes, they are 9-0, undefeated in the Big Ten, and they beat Indiana 45-17. But it hurts them because Wisconsin's schedule weak as hell. It's Big 12, I mean the Big 10, and their non-conference schedule is garbage as hell too. So they're going to be, they can most likely be an undefeated team who don't even make it to the college football playoff. Now, number 10 team, as I mentioned earlier, is the Miami Hurricanes, who are now 8-0, and they beat Virginia Tech 20-10. And I'm looking for Miami to move up significantly in these next college football rankings. So number 12 is Washington, and they beat Oregon 38-3. Auburn is number 14, and they beat Texas A&M 42-27. You know, Auburn has its two losses. They still haven't played Alabama yet, so we're still gonna see how they seem to come out. West Virginia beat Iowa State 20-16. Iowa State finally get a loss after winning a couple big games. Mississippi State beat UMass 34-23. USC in the late game beat Arizona State, number 17. USC beat Arizona State, who's number 22 at the time, 49-35. UCF continued their winning ways. They're number 18. They're 8-0, and they beat SMU, Southern Methodist University, 31-24. Stanford lost to Washington State, to Wazoo, 24-21. Now, let's go back and look at some of these stats, right? So, especially in this Oklahoma State game with these with a 52-62 score. Now, we know Baker Mayfield went crazy. So, Baker Mayfield, who might win the Heisman. I think Baker might win the Heisman. He went 24 for 36 for 598 yards, five touchdowns, and two picks with a 95.4 QBR. So, Rudolph, the quarterback for Oklahoma State, went 28 for 54, 448 yards, five touchdowns, and two picks with a 76.8 QBR. So, rushing, Oklahoma State had 213 yards of rushing. Their running back, Hill, had 30 carries for 28 yards, two touchdowns. Oklahoma was more so running back by committee. So, Anderson had 21 carries for 111 yards and a touchdown. Sermon had 10 carries for 81 yards and a touchdown. Baker Mayfield also had a rushing touchdown. So, let's look at these receiving yards. You know these receiving yards is crazy. So, Oklahoma had one receiver, Brown, who had nine receptions, 265 yards, two touchdowns. They had another receiver who had three catches for 102 yards. You would expect the wealth to be spread more than that, but it wasn't. Another receiver with 53 yards, one with 51, another one 49, 48, and 25 for Oklahoma. Oklahoma State, they had one receiver, Washington, had seven catches, 128 yards, and a touchdown. T. Johnson had four receptions, 118 yards, two touchdowns. Aitman had six catches, 64 yards, two touchdowns. They had somebody else, 53 yards, 47 yards, 16, 15, and 7 yards. So, not a lot of defense. Not a lot of goddamn on defense in this game. I hate Big 12 football. The defense is horrible. So, that's what happened in that game. Moving forward, if Oklahoma really thinking about making a push, they're going to play some defense. Now, let's look at the stats of this Miami v. Tech game. This is one of the marquee games. This is actually a primetime game in conjunction with the LSU-Alabama game, right? So, Rozier, the quarterback for Miami, went 10 for 21, 193 yards, two touchdowns, three picks. He had three picks early. But Miami was able to keep their composure and pull out the victory. Now, Miami's defense looks incredible. It was like they're flying all over the field. That concept of that turnover chain has transformed the way that Miami defense played because they're flying over the field and they're creating turnovers. They're creating a lot of turnovers because the boys want to wear that chain. So let's look at the rushing stats. Miami had 219 rushing yards. V-Tech had 102. Miami receivers, Herndon the fourth had 61 yards, Richards had 57, Barrows had 50, for VTech, Phillips had 101, Savoy had 39, Kuma had 22. As far as the fumbles, Miami recovered two fumbles. As far as interceptions, and total turnovers and things. I think Miami had like two interceptions. So Miami was out there. That's four turnovers. So Miami was out there doing their thing. Miami looked good. So next week we got Miami versus Notre Dame, which is a marquee game, and we're going to see what both of those teams are made of. We're able to see Notre Dame have some pretty good victories. So this is going to be a good one. I'm rooting for Miami to pull this one out. It's been an exciting year in college football. You don't know what's going to happen next. You don't really know who's going to stay on top other than Alabama. Georgia, with Georgia, it remains to be seen. Hopefully Georgia still don't have the Mark Richt syndrome. We're going to see at the University of Georgia, was it really Mark Richt or is it just the University of Georgia? What I mean by that is Georgia will be good all the way up to like the championship game or like the playoff game or back in the days, the bowl games. It's just the wheels just fall off and they don't have any real significant postseason wins under the Mark Richt era. So hopefully Mark Richt didn't bring that down to Miami and hopefully Georgia can right the ship because those two teams could very well play in the college football playoff. It could be Alabama, who could it be? Alabama, Georgia, Miami. I don't think Clemson probably would make it, because if Miami beat Clemson in the ACC championship game, they would give Clemson two losses. So that would put Miami in the championship game. And maybe, I don't know. Maybe a TCU or something. I don't know. Maybe a Wisconsin. I don't know. But it's interesting. It's interesting to see what happens. All right. So y'all know what time it is. Time for this weekly rant. This is part of the show where I let somebody ass have it. So today, two motherfuckers get it. Stephen A. Smith getting it, and Papa John's with that weak-ass pizza getting it. Let me start with old Stephen A. Sellout, Stephen A. Sambo, Stephen A. Hopalong, Stephen A. Yes, sir, boss, Stephen A. Fucked Up Headline, Stephen A. I love me some white people, and I shit on black people. All right. So, Stephen A. Smith, on his radio show, went on a tangent about the hoodie warm-ups that Nike has made. So Nike had every team in the NBA are wearing warm-ups with hoodies on them, made by Nike. Stephen A. Smith got a problem with it. Problem with it so much that he took it so far out of context and reach that he had a nerd to put a little reference of Trayvon Martin into it about the hoodies, right? And Stephen A. Smith did that on the show. And in that rant that he had, he also mentioned to slide J.R. Smith in the Cleveland Cavaliers. J.R. Smith was on the bench, and he said J.R. Smith is on the bench with his hoodie on looking ridiculous. And he said NBA benches are no places for hoodies. J.R. Smith shouldn't have had the hoodie on the way he was looking. He really singled J.R. Smith out for no reason, right? Like a little bitch. He really did. Just singled J.R. Smith out for no reason and just went on this rant about the hoodies. Now, the white people in the NBA ain't had no issue with the hoodies, but the black Sambo got an issue with the hoodies. Stephen A. Sambo. Stephen A. Sellout. So, after Stephen A.'s rant, J.R. Smith, via Twitter, had some replies for him. He said, "This man is always reaching. What does me wearing my hoodie on the bench have anything to do with reminding white people of Trayvon?" Because Stephen A. Smith said that when white people see those hoodies, they're going to think about Trayvon Martin. But my question to you about that, Stephen A. Smith, is Trayvon Martin was black, so what are white people thinking about when they see the hoodies? Trayvon Martin was the black man who was the victim, who was hunted down by the white Spanish boy, George Zimmerman. So when white people see the hoodies and they think about Trayvon, what are they actually thinking about, Stephen? What are they really thinking about? Are they saying, "Oh yeah, we got another nigga, we just killed another nigga"? Are they saying, "I can't believe they're wearing hoodies, I'm afraid"? You are really reaching here, and I agree with JR. I agree with y'all. You really, really reaching. It's usually JR the subject of these rants. But nah, JR, I got your back in this rant. Stephen A. Smith, use a hoe. Use a straight hoe, man. And you need to stop your caping. Take your cape off, man. White folk don't like you. Your show sucks. You and Max Kellerman and the other white boy, the lawyer white boy, y'all, your show sucks, Stephen A. Let me read some more. And speaking of Trayvon, Jared Smith said, "Oh, and they shouldn't forget about him." He said, "One, they shouldn't forget about Trayvon, and two, how does me out of 450 plus NBA players, like seriously, keep my name out your mouth, Stephen A. Smith?" So really, so out of all the players, how you call out JR? JR was the only player on the bench in that game with a hoodie on. You got two teams that are playing and players with hoodies on. JR also went on to say, "You want to talk about me not playing, that's fine. But don't try and put me in something I have nothing to do with. I am not the only one." All right, so this is Stephen A. Smith's rebuttal to J.R. Smith's comments. And Stephen A. Smith said this on the First Take Show. I wasn't talking about J.R. Smith. I was talking about Nike Smith, Stephen A. said. Nike's the one making the hoodies. I wasn't talking about him wearing the hoodie doing layup lines or whatever. I was talking specifically about J.R. Smith that was on the bench because he had only played 3 minutes in the fourth quarter of that opening against Boston. But you just said you wasn't talking about J.R. And then you come back and say you're talking about J.R. So what is it? You're either talking about J.R. or you're not talking about J.R. It's within the same sentence, the same context. First you said you're not talking about J.R. Then you say you're talking about J.R. So let me read it again. He says, I wasn't talking about J.R. Smith. I was talking about Nike. Nike's the one making the hoodies. I wasn't talking about him wearing the hoodies doing layup lines or whatever. I was talking specifically about J.R. Smith that was on the bench because he had only played 3 minutes in the fourth quarter of a game against Boston. He was sitting on the bench with his hoodie on looking like a sad puppy because D-Wade was on the floor for 8 minutes, for 8 or 12 minutes as opposed to J.R. Smith, who obviously reportedly was very upset at the fact that he was taken out of the starting lineup. Handle your business. If you start playing the way you're supposed to be playing, you wouldn't be concerned about anything I say. No. Stephen A. Smith. Nah. Don't try to spin it like that. You the hoe for this one. What that man got to do with the hoodies? You got something against JR. You called JR Smith out because you wanted to call him out because you got something against JR and you're gonna hide behind that camera and stuff. I hope JR come to see you. They need to come see you. You need your ass whooped, Stephen A. Smith, because you've been stepping over the line. You've been caping for these white folk too hard, too long. You've been reaching out. You've been reaching out too hard, too long for these white folk, and they do not like you. So this is JR's rebuttal to that. Don't get mad at me because the show trash, and this show is trash. Don't get mad at me because your show trash. Ratings are down. It's no secret. Everyone knows. The best part about it is you take the time out your day to prepare what you're going to say about me. That's so flattering. I'm so appreciative for giving me my own time. Thank you. Then JR goes on to say, didn't he have his own show before AM? What happened? Now he then got kicked off this one too. Guess he's back to the drawing board. Then he also says, him and Max trying to bring the show back after Skip left, and they got all the smiling faces and the laughing faces. Then Stephen A. Smith comes back and says, listen up, folks. I'm not about to get into anything with J.R. Smith. I happen to like the brother. He's good people. He's a champion, and he's the Cavs' best perimeter defender. But right now, he's playing horribly. When he plays well, I say so. When he doesn't, I want Pierre to have a nice day. No, but Stephen A. Smith, what does his play have to do with you calling him out about anything that you have anything to say about the hoodies that Nike are wearing? If you don't like the hoodies, you don't like the hoodies. But what does this man have to do with you? And first of all, who cares that you don't like the hoodies? The NBA didn't come ask your ass, do you like the hoodies? We don't like your hairline. We don't like your hairline, Stephen A. Smith. We don't. We don't like them coon eyes and them coon lips that you got. We don't. But you don't see us going on tirades about it, but we will now. Since you opened up that door, we will now. With your punk ass. Stephen A., you a sucker, and you reaching, and you trying to stay relevant. You trying hard to stay relevant amongst all of the flugaziness that you bring to the sport newscasting world. You a simp, Stephen A. Your time is running out. You a simp. That's why you keep making these desperate attempts to take these shots at these players, because you know your time is running out, because you was a simp and you soft and your platform sucks. You suck. Max Kellerman got way more. Why do the white boys on your show got way more sense of social consciousness than you? And it's not like you don't know what's going on, but you know your role. Your role is to make white folk comfortable. Your role is to be the coon that you are. And you know your role, and you play your role well. But you's a soft bitch, though, Stephen A. Smith. And I hope JR swang on your ass. These players need to start coming to see you. I guarantee you, these players show up at your house, at your door, show up at your car, at your job. You ain't going to want to talk no more stuff. Y'all always think y'all safe behind your cameras and your keyboards and stuff. You ain't have no reason to put that man in nothing that you were saying, but you decided to put that man in that. Then you try to say, I wasn't talking about JR, but I am talking about JR. Hey, he been sitting on the bench for 3 minutes. He only played 3 minutes. Who cares? So what? The man ain't having the season you want him to have. So what? What does that have to do with him wearing a hoodie on the bench? You attack that man for no reason. When nothing going on, you attack that man. Stephen A., you soft as hell. And white folk don't like you. White supremacy don't like you. They don't. When you not bringing them no more money, they going to kick your dumb ass to the curb. And that's all I got to say about that, because we going to kick your dumb ass to the curb. So the black delegation would like to trade Stephen A. Well, actually, we don't want to trade Stephen A. Smith, because the black delegation, we don't want any white people on our team. Stephen A. Smith, you are hereby cut and exiled from black America. You no longer are a part of us or represent anything about us with your sellout, coon, chicken in, boot-licking ass. All right, so my second part of my rant is going to go to garbage-ass Papa John. And that garbage-ass pizza, that garbage-ass sauce, and that dry-ass pizza. The best thing about Papa John's pizza is that damn dipping sauce. That dry-ass hot pepper, that dry-ass crust, that garbage-ass sauce, that ragged-ass cheese, and the other garbage-ass toppings, and that garbage-ass pizza from Papa John's, who have reportedly said that they're losing sales because of the recent protests of the national anthem from the NFL. So they're saying white people have said that, hey, we're not buying pizza because of the NFL protests. But DiGiorno and Pizza Hut say that their ratings are up. Now, could it be that Papa John's ratings are down because Peyton Manning is no longer the spokesperson? Could be. But I do know one thing. Well, they said Papa John's lost about $70 to $77 million in revenue over the last couple years and quarters or whatever. But who gives a damn? That piece of garbage. Now, he gonna lose more money. I say to everybody, don't buy that garbage ass pizza no more. Make Papa John suffer. Make him suffer. The crust on that pizza made out of toilet bowl porcelain anyway. Think about it. The only pizza chain who put dipping sauce in their box because they know how garbage their pizza is. You eat that Papa John's, you're going to be on the toilet in 2 minutes. I throw that Papa John's out the back door. The cats out the back door. The possums won't even eat that pizza. The raccoons won't even take a doodle on that pizza. That Papa John's garbage. Hot garbage. Don't buy that hot garbage-ass pizza. So, John Sheriff is the name of the Pop. Now he inherited Papa John's from his father, right? He's the president and chief operating officer. I mean, their president and chief operating officer's name is Steve Ritchie. Papa John's is really losing revenue because people are not watching the game. So when people don't watch the games, don't see the commercials, whoever's commercials are not getting viewed, they lose revenue because people not buying that garbage ass Papa John's. Because you keep seeing the Papa John's commercials, you might buy Papa John's. But hey, I don't know. And then now a lot of people are saying that John was put up to say that by Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, because Jerry Jones reportedly owns about 100 Papa John's pizza stores. So he brought it to the franchise and owns 100 of them. So they're saying that John is echoing the sentiments. John is a lot like Trump. They're echoing the sentiments, or they're echoing the private conversations that they had with these owners. That's what they're really doing. And these owners are being put into the spotlight, because we know they're putting these folk up saying a lot of this stuff. But And he's saying that the NFL has bad leadership and they need to get this under control. Basically, keep your niggas under control. Keep your niggas from protesting, because protesting is causing white folk not to watch the game, which is causing people not to see my commercials, which causes people not to buy my garbage-ass pizza. I encourage everybody to talk bad about Papa John's and don't buy that garbage-ass pizza. Papa John's is horrible. Your pizza garbage. If I buy a box of Papa John's, I buy it just to wipe my ass with. But I wouldn't waste my money on Papa John's pizza to wipe my ass. I just go to the dollar store, get me some tissue and wipe my ass. That should be the new challenge. Get you some Papa John's and wipe your ass with it. And go to the nearest Papa John's store and take that piece of pizza that you wiped your ass with and throw it at the store. But don't spend your money on no Papa John's pizza. Don't spend your money. People want to act stupid, make that cracker feel, make that cracker pockets feel more worse. Make that cracker pockets feel way more worse. Make that cracker pockets feel way much more worse than what they're feeling now. Fuck you, John. Fuck your pizza. Fuck that garbage ass dipping sauce. Well, the dipping sauce the best thing, I ain't gonna lie. Dipping sauce the best thing, that butter dipping sauce. But fuck the container that dipping sauce come in. Fuck that dry ass pepper. That dry ass crust. Garbage ass piece of sauce. Fuck the garbage ass cheese. The garbage ass pepperoni. The garbage ass box that the pepperoni come in. Some ragged ass Papa John establishments that you have. Fuck you, John. Because what you don't realize is we don't need Papa John's pizza. We don't need pizza. And I love DiGiorno's and Domino's and Pizza Hut and them for trolling. Papa John's has been getting trolled by DiGiorno's mostly, but DiGiorno's and Domino's and stuff, they've been trolling them on Twitter. Saying, hey man, we ain't losing revenue. We over here getting this money. Our sales are going up. What's up with you? And when you got a frozen pizza chain cracking jokes at you, that's how you know you got it. Because that DiGiorno's ain't good either. But they making more money right now than that garbage ass Domino. I mean, that garbage ass Papa John's. And that Domino just stepped their game up, because Domino's was garbage as hell for a long time, too. But, John, you probably start calling the Papa John because you was getting molested by your papa, but hey, I don't know. Ooh, that's my papa's. I'm going to name my pizza chain Papa John's. Okay. Sweet pie ass. But fuck you, John. Fuck your pizza. Fuck your life. Fuck your mama. Fuck that ragged ass hairstyle you got. Them ugly ass Papa John's shirts that you got. I'm hungry, though. But I'm not eating no ragged-ass Papa John's pizza. I'll wipe my ass with Papa John's pizza. If I go to somebody's house and they serve me Papa John's, I'm going to wipe my ass with it. I swear I will. Hey, man, that's my weekly rant. Fuck, forget you, John. You ain't talking about nothing. You ain't talking about nothing. Your pizza garbage. And everybody, don't buy that garbage-ass pizza no more. Somebody want to show their ass, you show them that, hey, we got the power. And we ain't taking it from you and your ragged ass, but your pizza ain't good enough for you to go out here and make these statements that they the leadership ain't in control and they need to get their players in control. Your pizza ain't good enough for you to be standing on that garbage ass. Fuck you, John, man. We got to learn where the power is. The power is with us. Power is with the people. We got to understand that. No, don't be sheep. Don't be sheep. Be critical thinkers. Be individual thinkers. Understand the group dynamics and understand how you work as a unit. Hey, man, that's the fix. This is the fix. This is how I go down. The realest and the blackest sports podcast you've ever heard. Keep it real. Keep it real. And I ain't saying nothing bad about J.R. Smith this time. I had J.R. back this time. But fuck you, Stephen A. Smith. Fuck you, Papa John. Fuck you, Bob. And now, Fuck all the bullshit that's going on. All you racist fucks, fuck y'all. And all you black people who support white supremacy, fuck y'all too. And all you black people who cannot give up sports for the cause, fuck y'all too. So, that's my show. And I hope to see y'all. Well, I hope y'all tune in next week. And we keep it real. We keep it 100. And it's a real thing. It's a real thing. We have too many people out here caping and not telling the truth and not really keeping it real. And yeah, I mean it. Like, if you're a black person and you understand what's going on, you see how the NFL is treating our people, and you can't give up the game because you enjoy it just that much, you tripping. And somebody need to tell you fuck you so you can wake your dumb ass up and do something different. I love football too, but it's deeper than that. Right now it's bigger than that. And we have to take some sort of stand. We have to meet the players somewhere, somehow. Like, we have to meet them at some point. Can't just put it all on the players. We are the ones who have more of the ability to be active, so let's get active. But one free thing you can do as a black person, one free thing you can do is turn off the damn game. Don't watch football. Turn it off. That's one free thing you can do. Find other ways to occupy your time. And with that being said, I'm Joseph Ward. This is Fix. And we'll catch y'all next week. Holla!
I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from the Air Force. There's no one that can